This is John Davidson saying, if you don't listen to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, you are missing something. Now that's incredible.
Welcome back to this encore presentation. What encore thing? Welcome to this encore thing of AM Radio Gold 1977. This is one of my favorite episodes of all time. It is a rundown of some of our favorite songs from the year 1977. And it dovetails perfectly with what the three of us are doing right now. Because when we are doing the encore thingy, whatever that's called, rebroadcasting, when we're doing
encore.
When we're doing encores, that's the time when we are planning and researching and recording our episodes for the next season. And what we are doing right now, coincidentally, has very much to do with the music of 1977. One of the episodes that we're working on right now is a tribute to Andy Gibb. And this is something that's a long time coming. There have been a lot of requests for it. In the 3 years that we've been doing this podcast, this is something that people feel very strongly about. And we're finally going to bring it to you.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a 15-parter.
I think it might be.
When you put Kristen, who longtime listeners know, used to fantasize about running down the beach or just walking around an apartment in a bathrobe with Andy Gibb. Mm-hmm. You get a 15-part episode that is truly magnificent.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we are
it won't
doing
be 15 parts.
Him justice, I think. The research that I've been doing, I texted Kristen the other day and I said, I think I'm developing a crush on Andy Gibb. Can you do that?
Post-puberty? Posthumously.
Posthumously, depending on your emphasis.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm just, my sister was the fan. And so I feel like I'm experiencing him for the first time in a way beyond just the songs that I knew back in the 70s. And boy, I tell you, what a cutie patootie. I am enjoying every minute. Thank goodness for YouTube. You can kind of experience it.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah. I'm with you. And you'll hear me say this when we actually record the Andy Gibb episode, but same, Carolyn, it was my sister's crush. So, and I've always loved Andy Gibb. But I think I'm appreciating him on a totally different level now at age 54. It was kind of funny. Listeners, we also have an episode coming up on Charlie's Angels next season, this coming season. And so I asked my husband last night, I said, tomorrow night, I need to either watch some Charlie's Angels or like, cause you know, this is hard work, guys.
Right.
I got to work tomorrow night.
Yeah. We're committed.
I either need to watch about three episodes of Charlie's Angels or an Andy Gibb behind the music and maybe, you know, a good handful of, you know, performances. Which would you like to watch with me? And I thought for sure he'd say Charlie's Angels and he would like to watch Andy Gibb.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Wow.
Yeah, he appreciates his music and his songs. And he also loved, you know, remember back, wait, oh my gosh, was it like the first 2 weeks of this that Bee Gees documentary came out and Kristen watched it and called us all like an emergency call in the middle of the night.
Meeting.
Basically like, you guys need to watch this tomorrow and we have to record an episode. And we did. And yeah, my husband and I watched that together and we loved it. So, we're enjoying some Andy Gibb.
It's interesting because this is something that people feel very personally about. They feel very strongly about it. And his birthday was just this week, just a couple of days ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm so stunned at all of the love that comes out on March 5th for this man who's been dead for 35 years. 35 years? Yeah, over 36 years. Something crazy like that, including yesterday, and I think she does this yearly, Victoria Principal posted throwing some roses into the ocean, which she does every year on March 5th. This is a man who she broke up with in 1982, and she's still commemorating him every single year. It's not something that ended well even, and she's still commemorating him every year. This year, she didn't even put his name on the post, so which tells me that it's not a pick me move. It's not like everybody look at me, right? This is a very genuine expression of grief that some people will know what she's doing.
Right?
And the people who know are the only ones who matter. And everybody else who doesn't know what she's doing, it just doesn't matter. But that just kind of speaks to the impact that he had on everybody, both in our culture and the people that he knew personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she just put three little emojis, like a dove and a little birthday mm-hmm. cake and a heart. And then, listeners, if you go to our Facebook feed, you can see we shared it. And I didn't put anything else, really, just her post and the comments we got. People knew, right?
People just know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find when you listen to this episode, the 1977 AM Radio Gold episode, there's a substantial piece about Andy Gibb, which is why we're talking about him today. So please enjoy this rewind episode of AM Radio Gold 1977. Don't forget that the PCPS is here because of listeners like you. We are a people-powered program fully supported by monetary contributions from our members on Patreon. We quite literally could not do it without you. If you'd like to become a supporter, visit our website or our link in bio and click on the Patreon link. You can join for as little as the price of one Swanson frozen TV dinner, just one. But that TV dinner goes a long way in helping us keep the lights on and the bills paid. Every dollar helps this podcast and this community grow, reaching more listeners and creating more episodes. And in return for your support, we'll send you thank you gifts in the form of podcast outtakes, videos of our recording sessions, and invitations to members-only events. Thanks to you, we think we have something pretty special going on, and we are just getting started. Thanks for your time, your support, and all those good vibes. And please enjoy the show.
And let me tell you guys, I crushed hard on David. I think I've shared some of this with you. I had my Starsky and Hutch socks and everything. And as you know, I did get to stay home from Saturday Night Mass on one of the Starsky and Hutch two-parters that was continued. And I could not miss the to be continued. And my parents let me stay home. And it was very nice of them.
I love that your parents let you stay home. Like, they understood how important Starsky and Hutch was to you.
They did say, you know, you're going to miss the dinner at Red Lobster. I mean, they tried
to
convince me with the Red Lobster.
You know what?
It was about God.
No,
it was about
biscuits.
Nothing gets between me and Hutch.
Hello, world. There's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who like their ding-dongs wrapped in foil.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the music that came out of our transistors, our car stereos, and our Mickey Mouse radios. Panasonic, GE, or Radio Shack, it doesn't matter. We'll be saving the songs that are certified by us to be AM Radio Gold, specifically from the year 1977.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
Come on, get happy.
Welcome to our first installment of an ongoing series called AM Radio Gold, celebrating the songs we heard when AM radio was king, or more precisely, when AM radio was all we had. Because if you were listening to the radio prior to 1980, whether it was in the car, in the kitchen, on your nightstand, or on that little transistor radio you held to your ear, it was most definitely on the AM frequency.
And you guys, wasn't I like last week,
eight years old
when I learned that?
Yes, poor Michelle does not know what our episode is about as of a week ago. She's looking for Rush Limbaugh songs.
I'm embarrassed, but I'm going to own it, because when Kristen's like, it was the songs on your AM radio. And I said, but you guys, I didn't listen to AM radio. And Kristen's like, did you listen to music before 1980? And I was like, yes, but I didn't listen to like talk radio or opera or classical
or church
music. And she's like, is that all you think was on AM radio? I was like, yes.
There was no FM, if you guys recall. So FM radio really didn't come into play for a really long time. And we didn't make that transfer really until the 80s. So 70s music is AM radio gold.
Well, so I'm glad to learn that I did listen to AM radio.
Yes, you did.
I loved it.
You know songs, which means that you listen to AM radio. And in those of you in the audience, you did too. So today we're focusing on the year 1977 because I'm in charge and I lived for radio in 1977. And by this time, I had found Casey Kasem on Sunday nights, and I either listened to the countdown on my transistor radio hidden under my pillow, or I used the clock radio on my nightstand. A clock radio, I might add, I recently tracked down on eBay and ceremoniously placed upon my nightstand once again where it belongs.
I love that.
I do too.
Yes, those clock radios are, I had mine, the very first one I got was actually in 1977, mm-hmm. and it saw me through my entire adulthood. I had that thing until probably the early 2000s. It was the only clock radio I ever owned. For a while, Andy and I both had our OG clock radios yep. on each of our nightstands. And only because I didn't really need a clock radio anymore did I get rid of it. It was the red digital numbers. Yep. Mm-hmm. And besides my family, that radio was the constant in my life forever. I mean, from 1977 when I'm in middle school to my early newlywed years, married years.
That's kind of one of those flat ones that are brown on top.
Yes,
kind
yes,
of the
brown.
Flat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We had one of those hanging around for years. I bet it was Brian's. And I remember it was always hanging around, like when we'd have guests over and they needed a clock or something. I wonder if we still have that.
He would just
you know,
go to the
I can
closet
picture it.
Pull
it's
out
like
his
squashed
yeah.
down mm-hmm. flat.
Yep. Yes.
Had the yeah, it had the digital
the
but
red
it was
digital
the,
numbers.
The red ones, mm-hmm. not the ones that flip.
No, Andy no. had the flip ones. And
those
that was annoying.
Hummed.
Yeah,
they
would it's loud.
It is.
Yeah. Especially when it when all three numbers turn. So when it yeah. turns 8 o'clock, it goes chunk.
Yeah, midnight yeah. when you've yes. got like all of
I
those.
I kind
of
like that sound.
I love it.
Clock radio ASMR.
And I can tell the time. I can be nowhere near a clock and I hear cha-chunk. I'm like, oh, it's getting late. It's like midnight. I better go to bed. I mean, because I have one right now. Big surprise. I do have yes. a flip clock right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they obviously mean something to us. I mean, the fact that yeah. you went on to eBay and found it and now have it back on your nightstand. When you think about like laying in bed at night and just, you know, we can't fall asleep and we're crying over the boyfriend that,
yes.
you know, rejected us. Or we've got that hard final in the morning or you're making a big decision. And it's the first thing you see when you wake up and you're hitting the thing or you're listening for your school number for a snow, you know,
for the snow day.
Yeah, for the snow day. It's just been there for all of that. So I think that's why it's such a
and
special
so
place.
And so much came through that radio.
Yes.
I heard all of the music of my childhood on that radio. And
yes.
mine was an analog clock and the little twisty dial
okay.
that would go up and down the frequency. And it to me, it's a real mid-century cultural icon. So when it sits mm-hmm. on my nightstand right now, it looks like a decorative piece. I mean, to mm-hmm. me, it does. Mike is like, why do you have a broken clock on your nightstand?
Looks
but
like
it represents an awful
house.
Lot to me. And,
yeah.
and I think the Casey Kasem part of it is really significant because Casey Kasem was my dude. He was my
sure.
buddy every Sunday night for so many years. And he came through that little analog radio.
Well, love and we it. Learned back in our Sad Songs of the 70s episode, way back in, that was in like February of 2021, mm-hmm. listener. So that's a fun episode to go back and listen to. But we learned that Kristen not only listened every Sunday night, but she kept a tiny notebook.
I did.
And she wrote down the order of the countdown and the songs, and then she'd hide it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She'd listen to it so low that like snails could hear it.
Yeah,
like,
because I
like
didn't want to get
volume,
in trouble because
yeah.
it ended at 11 p.m. and that was way past my bedtime. And I knew that the chances of my parents coming in and telling me that it was time to turn off the radio would come any minute. And honestly, that would be tragedy if I couldn't find out what the number
oh
one
gosh,
song
can
was.
You imagine? Oh.
And I couldn't like go online and find out what mm-hmm. the number one song was. You had to be listening. And so I would incrementally turn down the radio. I would like turn it down, let my ears get used to it. Turn it down, let my ears get used to it. Until it was so low that in the morning I would wake up and the radio would be on and I wouldn't be able to hear it.
Right.
It was
even
like my superpower.
Though, currently on Sirius radio, they have like the 70s channel and you'll mm-hmm. hear the old Casey Kasem countdown. I will sit in parking lots. I will, if I'm at home, I'll sit in the driveway. I'll take a lap around the block because I'm
yes.
like, I've just been listening to this for the past 30 minutes. There's no way
I'm
not going to hear what
I'm invested
one is.
In this. I yeah. have to know what the number yeah. one song
but
is.
But it's also fun now to go back to that station and test your knowledge. I'll go, right. mm-hmm. if we're in the car together, we'll go, okay, wait, so 5 was this, 4 was this, 3 was this, 2 was this. We're at 1970, what, 8? Okay, I'm going to bet number one is, you know, mm-hmm. so it's kind of a fun little game to play.
I love playing that game, and Mike won't play with me. I'll be like, okay, what do you think it is? And Mike will be like, I don't know. How the hell would I know? I'm like, I think it's how deep is your life.
Yeah. I wouldn't have known before this podcast. I will be honest with you before, but we've learned so much.
This has been an education, right? Yes. You can now make educated guesses. And you guys, quite often I'm right. Although I guess I was keeping track of the top 10 in a notebook.
That's all right.
From like 1975 until I graduated from college. 1977 gave us some of the most memorable music in history. To see how big 1977 was, all you have to do is look to the Grammy Awards of 1978, which gives awards to music released in the previous year. So music released in 1977 would be given a 1978 Grammy. This was the 20th Grammy Awards, and it was hosted by John Denver in the biggest bow tie you've ever seen.
It's, I think it's going to eat his head.
I know.
It's so big.
It's so big. Okay, so just listen to this. Album of the year was Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. The best pop vocal group was the Bee Gees for How Deep Is Your Love. The best R&B performance nominations included the Commodores, Aretha Franklin, Marvin Gaye, and Leo Sayer. I don't actually get that one. And you guys, Leo Sayer won. Leo Sayer won the, yes, for You Make Me Feel Like Dancing. I want to dance the night away. Is that an R&B song? I mean,
listeners, we're going to be singing a lot in this episode. And again, I'll say what I said a couple of episodes before. We all sound like fantastic to us, and we sound like we're in harmony. And we realize now in re-listening to these episodes, we're not in harmony. We do still sound fantastic. But we're all like one beat behind each other. So apologies, but it's not going to make us stop singing.
I just think it's weird that Leo Sayer won with that song that isn't actually an R&B song against, come on, Marvin Gaye and Aretha Franklin, please. Okay, best country song nominations included Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue by Crystal Gayle, Lucille by Kenny Rogers. Not the same.
No.
And Desperado, which I never thought of as a country song, but it works. Desperado.
Yeah. I love Karen Carpenter's version of that. You guys, those are three top songs. That's a hard one.
What
one?
That's huge.
What one?
Huge.
I'll tell you in a little bit because it's one of my favorite songs.
Okay. So best original score nominations doesn't seem like it's something that we would pay a lot of attention to until you hear who the nominees are.
Oh my goodness.
Which includes Star Wars, Rocky, A Star Is Born, and You Light Up My Life. Hello, 1977. Mm-hmm. Right? And then this one is even a more obscure category. We have the best instrumental arrangement nominations, which included, again, this is only interesting because of these big names. So it included both Star Wars and Rocky, but also Nadia's theme, which is on the radio.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It's an instrumental. It's a do, 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 yeah. do.
Yeah,
it's
and the rest
on the radio. Yeah. And it's a huge hit. A huge hit.
Okay. I can't believe that.
I know. It's a big, big year. And our best new artist nominations included Debbie Boone, Andy Gibb, and Sean Cassidy. Icons, all of them. Everything I mentioned was iconic. Every single thing.
If you want viewing gold, go Google the 1978 Grammys, Sean Cassidy, and you'll see John Denver in his giant bow tie introduce Sean Cassidy, and this is his first performance on the Grammys, and mm-hmm. he's wearing all white, and he's got his hair is just feathered to perfection.
So perfect.
And he sings That's Rock and Roll, and he's adorable singing it. It's the cutest performance.
Sean mannerisms are so great, and that, like, you know, that certain kind of thingy he does with like his head.
She's doing it right now. Yeah, she's like, moving.
Kind of
you know what you're doing? Like, you're getting your feathered hair out of your eyes. That's what you're doing.
But his almost like didn't move. It was just like, it kind of moved, but mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a very Sean Cassidy.
Yeah.
It's perfection.
Also included in the best new artist nominations was Foreigner, which is so funny because I think of, like, hasn't Foreigner always been around? That's classic rock. When would they have been best new artist?
Right.
And that, if you recall, that was when Cold as Ice came out, which is such a great song. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing that song for the first time on James at 15, but I looked and I cannot find that clip anywhere. James at 15 and mm-hmm. Cold as Ice.
Hmm.
I'm willing to sacrifice our love.
That was one of my first 8 tracks was Foreigner.
Is it really? So all of that is really interesting. However, today is not a history lesson. Today is personal. And Carolyn and Michelle and I are going to share the songs we waited for on the radio. We'll tell you who we were, where we were, and what these songs meant to us.
Okay, you guys, I know that we already talked about the clock radios that we had on our nightstands. I didn't get mine till the end, actually, of 1977, September, my birthday. But there are some distinct radio memories that I do have where I heard these songs. One was our built-in whole house intercom system that had a radio. So the 70s, it was a really big thing to have like this radio in your kitchen, but you could push a button and every bedroom had a little speaker by the door. And like my mom could call us to breakfast. Carolyn and Ronnie, time for breakfast.
God, I love those.
Or you could play the music. And so every morning when we came for breakfast, AM music would be playing out of that radio in our kitchen.
So cool. So that is where,
oh, I know. We felt really cool. And then my sister and I would play Airplane with it. So one person would sit in a room like they were in a seat and buckle your seatbelts. We're about to take off. And you know, we thought that was so cool. So there was that radio. And then there was my Texaco Havoline radio can radio. So
oh,
my dad
right.
worked for Texaco and they had this promotional gimmick marketing tool that was looked like a Havoline radio, but a Havoline can, oil can, but it was a radio. And that, you guys, is my iconic AM radio memory because it had the battery. I could take it, you know, wherever I wanted. So iconic and part of my growing up that in researching this and getting ready for this episode, I had to go on eBay and see, do these exist? Like, can you buy one?
Did you find it?
Right now, I am the highest bidder.
Yay!
So far, it ends tomorrow. Keep your fingers crossed, listeners. By the time you hear this, I will know if I am the proud owner of a Havoline radio.
Okay, you've inspired me. I'm going to go online now and I'm going to look for my very first radio. We talked about my clock radio, but my very first radio was a Mickey Mouse radio with a strap on it. So I could carry it around with
yeah.
me. It was like a transistor.
I know that one.
And,
yeah.
And there was like a speaker in his ear. And now that I think about it, I bet I got that when I was 5 or 6 years old. So I was kind of being indoctrinated into mm-hmm. listening to music really, really young.
Yeah.
And so that little transistor radio, this was an activity for me. This is not something that you would find a kid in 2022 doing. I would get a blanket and I would go out in the backyard and I would take my transistor radio and I would listen to the radio.
Yeah.
KDWB, 63 KDWB on your AM dial. And it's sort of like you just sit there and like listening to the music was the activity. It wasn't background music. That was what
right.
I was doing.
Right.
Well, in true character, I don't remember what I was listening on to. I didn't even know I was listening to AM radio in 1977. But I've determined, after consulting my graphs, I've determined that I was in Arlington, Texas, because I was in third grade. And that was a really good year. Like, I loved our house. I loved, I had my best friend. I do remember my best friend's name was Ashley Wiley. But as far as radios, my first one I remember really was, and I still own it, is my long pink Sharp cassette player
I
radio.
That
classic
mm-hmm.
pink, you know, yep. and it's in my office right now.
It's a little boombox.
It's like a little boombox, yeah. And that would have been FM because this would have been post-1980.
Right.
I do believe in 1980 for Christmas, my sister and I both got turntable but had a radio in it. And mm-hmm. I looked online, like the thing that went up, that lifted up over the yep. turntable, the lid was almost like a smoky brown
color. Oh, I think
color.
I own the same one.
I think it was the same one.
And
it sat on a, yes. you know, it had the silver that had the yeah. big radio mm-hmm. dial on it.
Yep.
Yeah.
If I had to choose my favorite song, and these don't have to be our favorites. These are just songs that were meaningful to us or we mm-hmm. couldn't wait to hear. Okay, so when I hear this song that was my favorite in 1977, first you hear like a drum beat and then there's a synthesizer. And the synthesizer note is held and then it modulates and then it's held. And when I hear that, my heart jumps into my throat. Literally, right now, when I'm 54 years old, it jumps into my throat. Sometimes I'll gasp Ask Liam. Sometimes I'll hear the synthesizer and I'll go, and then I wait for Andy Gibb to say,
for so long.
But he kind of goes, for so long.
We've been leaving, finding each other.
God, I love that song
so
too.
Long. The song, of course, is I Want to Be Your Everything. And this was the song that introduced the world to Andy Gibb. Oh, and how did we get introduced to Andy Gibb? This is from his first album, Flowing Rivers, which I was not even aware of the album Flowing Rivers. I was just enjoying this song on the radio. But it turns out Flowing Rivers is a kick-ass album, and mm-hmm. we might devote an entire episode just to Flowing Rivers someday. So this was the first of three number one singles for Andy Gibb, which made him the first male solo artist with three consecutive number one singles. It went to number one in July of 1977. It stayed there for several weeks. Then it was bumped to number two by his brothers. I think it was Night Fever. It was went to number two. And then in September, it popped back up to number one.
How about
when
that?
When does that happen? Isn't that crazy?
Could, yeah.
The little song that could. You guys, it was in the top 10 for months. For months. It was on the chart for almost a year. Like 7-8 months, it was on the chart.
Well, think about this now, Kristen. You are going to sleep with him and every Sunday night you're hearing him at some point on Casey Kasem because mm-hmm. he's in the top. So
yep.
No wonder. I mean, he was that most consistent voice in
he
your...
He was there.
As you were going
he
to sleep.
He was there.
Yes.
For so long.
That's another thing this podcast has created for me. It's like, I always loved that song.
Mm-hmm.
But until we started having these conversations and talking about music and the Bee Gees and everything, all of our memories, I've listened to I Just Want to Be Your Everything more in the past year and a half than I've listened to it probably ever in 1977.
Because it feels so good.
Feels
you guys,
so
I
good.
Still have a physical reaction to this song.
When he says, open up your heart, or when he says, open up the heavens in your heart
and let me be the things you want to me, and not just a puppet on a string. And here's the thing about that, you guys. He says, and this is just like, I'm picturing you, Carolyn, with your headphones on, listening to Sean Cassidy take a breath. Mm-hmm. He says, not just a puppet on a string.
String.
He says string. And it's so gentle and it's so light and it's just like he's so vulnerable. And actually, if you listen to a lot of Bee Gees songs, you'll hear Barry Gibb say string or misunderstood. Or listen to Jive Talking. You'll hear Barry Gibb do the same thing. And I just think it tells you how connected these brothers were. Or maybe, I don't know, people in Australia, is that an Australian thing? Maybe they say string.
They share a speech impediment.
But he doesn't say accent. Every S that way. It's only okay. Certain words. Not just a puppet on a string. Oh, and I would just die.
Oh, yeah. So it's a sexy song, too, the way he sings
God.
It.
Yes, uh-huh. You just fall in love with him because he's so in love. You totally believe him. And there is some controversy online because, you know, there's a bit, I know.
Carolyn's face.
On.
Because
a lot of people
argue about who this song is about. And they really very badly want this song to be about his new wife, because he got married in July of 1976, and this was recorded in October of 1976 before it was released in 1977. And he was only 18 years old. He married a woman named Kim Reeder. And this, of course, was not known by those of us reading Tiger Beat magazine. I don't know what I would have done with that information. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, he basically went from getting married to being a superstar in like a matter of months. It was just...
They needed to sell him as this hot single.
They really did, right. And they did that by splashing him all over Tiger Beat for all of us to fall in love with. So the other thing that people will argue about is, number one, is this song about his new wife? Was this song written on his honeymoon? Was this song recorded on his honeymoon? And you can't find any... it's hard to find verification of any of that. So I decided to go to the most reliable source that I could. And I sent a message to Andy Gibb's daughter, and I asked her for clarification.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Wait, how are we just now learning about this? Did you want to surprise us with this?
I wanted to surprise you. And And bless her heart, you guys, she was going to leave us a voicemail message, but she had flu and she lost her voice and she couldn't leave a message.
We need to remind listeners that Kristen and Andy Gibb's daughter are social media friends.
They're social media
which
friends.
Which is highly just like talk about blowing your mind,
right? Oh my God, your mind just explodes. Your mind just explodes. And so she explained that no, it couldn't be about her mom because this song was written entirely by Barry Gibb and not by Andy Gibb at all. Not for lack of trying, because apparently Andy Gibb has said in interviews that he was there like, okay, how about this? But Barry Gibb wrote so fast that by the time he's saying, why don't we open with this? Barry Gibb is on the chorus. and then the song is done. He said he wrote the song in about 20 minutes.
Wow. Whoa.
Totally done. Yeah. But she also said that her parents honeymooned in Bermuda, and Barry Gibb wrote the song with Andy Gibb in Bermuda. So it is possible that it was written on their honeymoon. They were honeymooning at Robert Stigwood's house in Bermuda.
Oh my gosh. With the Bee Gees.
With the Bee Gees. Yeah.
Had to do a little work.
Oh my God. You guys, this is all important, very insightful information. Like now I know where he honeymooned. I bet you there weren't a lot of people that know that. That's not common knowledge.
I like how Kristen, though, is just, she's so like laissez-faire about it. She goes, so I had to go to the source. And she's just right now, like, you guys can't see this. She's just right now, like, reapplying her Dr. Pepper lip smacker. Yeah, like, this is no big deal.
This is just another day.
Just another day. So you guys, I went to the source. I had to go and ask Andy Gibb's daughter. And you know what? We had this little back and forth and she was going to leave a voice. But you know what? Poor thing's got the flu. I sent her my grandma's chicken soup recipe. Like this is just common now for Kristen to converse with Andy Gibb's daughter. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Suffice it to say that left those words, his music, his voice, left an imprint on my heart. Mm-hmm. And I was going to go into like some of the lyrics, but I don't know. There's not much more for me to say because I'll just sing the whole song because all the words are meaningful to me. All of them, they're like a puzzle piece. And I know that's Barry Gibb's doing. He, you know, even like, darling mine, what is darling mine? I don't know, but it's just so, darling mine, it's so beautiful. I would wait forever for those lips of a wine. And he says it, those are lips of a wine. Mm-hmm. Those are lips of a wine. He does it like a little puzzle and it just burrows its way into my heart still today.
Darling mine, I would wait forever for those lips of a wine.
I love that. And a song, as we're talking about burrowing into hearts, that has burrowed into mine, is one of my favorites from 1977. And I'll call this song the family favorite because this is one that my entire family would not just sing, but belt out. And this would be Lucille.
You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille. Four lonely children and a crop in the field.
By Kenny Rogers. Which,
not Kenny Loggins.
No, not Kenny Loggins. Right. The other bearded gentleman, Rogers, which actually won that Grammy Award you were talking about for Best Country Vocal Performance. Yes. Okay. And it was his first number one hit of 21 hits. Okay. Wow. Kenny is the man. I mean, what a guy.
Recently, I've gone back and just listened to This Is Kenny Rogers on Spotify sometimes. And so many songs come on that I forgot about. And I would only listen to those, I'm sure, if I heard them on the radio or when I was visiting my dad because he liked country music. But, oh, man, there's a lot that we forgot about.
They are classic. And this was his first solo performance, too, because he had been a member of the New Edition prior, or the First Edition. Is it the New or the First?
First edition. Okay. New edition is Bobby Brown. Bobby Brown.
Yeah, no, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Not the same.
He had to clear. Yes.
Yeah. So,
Kenny was in the very first edition. But anyway, this is his first solo outing, and he hits number one, which is kind of exciting. And my family knew all of the words, and I can see us in the car belting out that song. And I also had this visual in my head. So as we know, there's the song, Four Hungry Kids and a Crop in the Field. And I saw these four hungry kids in my head, like in the field, like standing next to wheat stalks, like looking all forlorn because Lucille, their mother, has left them in this field.
It was very sad. She literally left them in the field.
Yes, she literally left them in the field.
But do you remember in our misheard lyrics?
Yes, I've got
another
that.
Good one. 400 yes. children.
People. And a crotch that won't
and
heal.
And a crotch that won't heal. Yes. Another thing I discovered when I was doing a little research on Lucille is a really fun website called Am I Right? So amiright.com, we'll put it in the notes, but it includes parodies of popular songs. So people like submit Huge. Parodies of songs that they've written. And Lucille has quite a few that have been submitted. Two of my favorites were Starbucks in Toledo. So the very first line is, in a bar in Toledo across, I can't sing, across from the depot. Well, on a bar stool, she took off her ring. Oh, yeah.
That's
but
right.
in the parody, it's a Starbucks in Toledo, and it's very funny, all the lines. So I'll put
Carolyn,
a link to
let's
that.
Let's put that in the week that we'll put a link to that in the Weekly Reader this week.
Yes.
That sounds like a really fun website.
So that's one of my 1977 gems.
Well, my songs, and just so you guys know, I don't have any like fun facts or anything factual about any of my songs. I'm going strictly on why these songs were important to Little
Absolutely.
Michelle.
Mm-hmm. That's what I want to
so
hear.
My number one song is That's Rock and Roll by Sean Cassidy, which reached number 79. I do have that fact in the top 100 for the year
I'm
1977.
I'm dancing right now in my head. Yeah.
And if you listen to our first episode, our very, very first episode, you guys all know why this song made my top three and my top one from 1977. And it is all about the dance.
The dance.
In 1977, we lived across the street from my sister's best friend, Penny. And when they would make up little dances to songs, I often got to participate. Like, they needed me, right? They needed Michelle's ability as a dance. And so the dance we made up to That's Rock and Roll has stuck with me for 45 years.
You can still
years.
Do it.
Oh, I can still do it. You guys know when we saw Sean in concert last summer, I was doing the dance when that part came. And you guys, do you remember his guitar string broke like halfway through that song after
oh,
like
yeah.
the first chorus?
Yes.
And I was like mid dance, mid choreography.
You were like mid shimmy.
I was so upset because I thought, no, that's why I came. That's why I came. But I thought, surely he's going to get a new guitar. And when they handed him a new guitar, he went on with his next song. I was crushed. But, yeah, so anyway, if you guys remember, my costume was just so snazzy. It was a plain black leotard. But my sister and Penny had those stitched rainbow jean shorts. You guys remember those? They're like tiny jean shorts, but they have like the embroidery stitch of the rainbow lines on them. Those eventually got passed down to me a couple of years later. I loved those shorts. And oh, it's just so great. Like, I think we performed on our back deck, and we probably performed for our moms and like David, Penny's little brother. But by the good grace of my mom, she had our giant, eight, what are those called? Like
eight millimeter
movie camera. So I have video footage of a snippet of this dance.
Thank God.
And it's, thank God. You know what? The world has thanked me. sadly, it's without the sound, but I know exactly what part of the dance this song goes to because, like I said, I remember the dance. And I've posted it on our Instagram stories before, but I don't know, you guys. I think it might need to come back out this week. What do
oh,
you guys
yeah.
think?
Oh,
you
my
think?
God. Yes.
Well, come on.
Another one of my favorites from 1977 was Barracuda by Heart.
Is that how you have to say it?
You have to say Barracuda. You absolutely Ooh. Do. You guys, this whole album had such an impact on me just from a visual standpoint because you walk into the record store and you would see Ann and Nancy Wilson on the cover of Little Queen, which is the name of the album. And they're just staring down the camera, but not in a sexual way. They are badass before mm-hmm. we had the word badass.
Right.
And this was real and true rock and roll. And That was not something you saw very often. And one of those women was the guitar player. That was something you never saw, ever.
No.
And so I would just, I didn't own the album. I would just visit it at the record store knowing what these women had to offer for me. And it was so meaningful, even though I had no desire to play the guitar. That's not what I was getting inspiration from. It was inspiration from her doing it, mm-hmm. right? Like she was being so badass. Like, well, you just, there's no other word that's just so awesome for it.
It was the possibility of
it was the possibility.
Like a woman being that right. badass.
Yes.
Was new to, well, that was something kind of new.
And they were in charge. It was new. Mm-hmm. They were breaking the rules. They were in charge. They were on the cover of that album. They weren't being sexual. And this was rock and roll. So the song, you know, the song itself has sort of a mesmerizing, driving beat. And so I was not big into rock and roll at that time, mm-hmm. like true hard rock and roll, but this song captured me and it was almost like I couldn't look away, right? Everybody stop. Everybody just stop and listen to this song. The song is actually a statement about the record industry and it was about Hart and Nancy Wilson. It was about Hart's anger toward an ad that their record label, Mushroom Records, had placed in a trade publication, implying that Ann and Nancy were lesbian lovers. You guys,
oh,
they
no.
were sisters. They were sisters. I mean, this is, it's, why?
It's, well, it's good. Let's go back to our Carpenters.
Yeah, I was going to say,
episode,
where they tried to right. make us think.
Where they tried to insinuate that Richard yeah. and Karen were yes. lovers.
And discovers lovers. This ad after a concert when a record promoter comes up to me and he's like, hey, how's your lover? And she's like, you mean my boyfriend, this guy over here? And he's like, no, Nancy. And she's like, that's my sister.
Did
you
he not
perv.
Know that she was her sister?
I don't know. But she went directly back to her hotel room and she wrote this song. And the rumor is that the original title for the song was Motherfucker.
It's the same amount of syllables. Maybe they had to find a word that had some of the same, you know, sound to it. Barracuda.
And you make it like a predatory fish.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a predatory fish.
I love knowing that now because now when that song does pop up on one of my playlists, that's what I'm going to sing out loud.
Yeah.
And that's what they meant.
Well, that also is just a good song to sing when you have a lot of feelings inside. I don't care what kind of feelings that you
need to
get out.
Thrash.
That's a good one, listeners.
Yeah.
Throw that on a playlist.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But now, especially that you can shout, ooh, motherfucker. Yeah, say it like that. Ooh, motherfucker.
Oh, gosh. I better not forget to push the little explicit thing on our ratings.
No kidding. Hey, we're just quoting.
Hey,
we're just quoting.
A lot.
Yeah.
We're quoting a lot.
Sorry, sometimes it needs to be said.
Ooh, Barracuda.
I'm going to share my next song, which happens to be by my celebrity crush, or one of them at that time. Ooh. So, you know, Michelle and Kristen have each shared one from theirs with Sean and Andy. This was sung by David Soul. You know, Hutch from Starsky and Hutch.
Yeah.
I should know that. Hutch from Starsky and Hutch, and he sang the ever lovely ballad, Don't Give Up on Us.
Don't give up on us, baby.
Yeah, baby. And let me tell you guys, I crushed hard on David. I think I've shared some of this with you. I had my Starsky and Hutch socks and everything. And as you know, I did get to stay home from Saturday Night Mass on one of the Starsky and Hutch two-parters that was continued. And I could not miss the to be continued. And my parents let me stay home. And it was very nice of them.
I love that your parents let you stay home. Like, they understood how important Starsky and Hutch was to
you. Well, they did say, you know, you're going to miss the dinner at Red Lobster. I mean, they tried
to
convince me with the Red Lobster.
You know what?
It wasn't about God.
No,
it was about
biscuits.
I'm sorry. Nothing gets between me and Hutch. And so I loved that song. Unfortunately for David, that was his only hit in the United States. It did hit number one on the Billboard Top 100 in April of 1977. And it also has the dubious ranking of number 93 from VH1's Top 100 Greatest One-Hit Wonders. So it squeaked in at number 93. But yeah, David did not have another hit after that.
But that was a good song. It was a good one. That's impression that is a lot of people.
Oh,
that is
most
the
definitely.
Very definition of a one-hit wonder, right? Mm-hmm. Because we still love that song today, and we can sing
people
it, so.
Love that song. Yeah, like well, you said, yeah. Today people are like,
yes.
Oh.
Well, yes. Evidently, he, David, re-recorded it in 2004 after he heard it being played in an elevator, but it was Owen Wilson's cover of the song from the film version of Starsky and Hutch. So I have not seen that. I've now seen the clip from the movie. It does look kind of darling. Owen Wilson, I really like that. Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Really cute. Ben Stiller, adorable. Adorable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Ben Stiller in the clip, he's wearing, you know, Starsky's big sweater. You know how Starsky
yeah,
always has those giant
shawl
sweater with the shawl collar on it. Mm-hmm.
It has now made my to be watched list.
It's cute.
And lastly, the song came back into my view when I saw it prominently featured in the Hulu series Candy. Which just came out in the past year. I really enjoyed it. Starred Jessica Biel. And it's an epic kind of walk down memory lane in terms of the scenery and just all the props and everything in that show. So if you haven't seen Candy, it's on Hulu, and this song features prominently in that series.
Along with some big-ass headphones, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's it's just really fun to watch
that's
for all
my,
of that
that's
stuff.
On my that's on my watch
it's
list.
It's a good one.
Sure.
It's really freaky because it's a true story.
It's true crime.
It's a crazy story.
I love that. I love those true crimes.
And she's so good.
Oh, okay. She's great.
Yeah.
Don't give up on us, baby. Don't make our wrong seem right. The future isn't just one night. It's written in the moonlight. Painted on the stars, we can't change ours. Don't give up on us, baby. Still worth one more try. I know we put a last one by.
Okay, so my second song that I picked is another song and story I've shared on this podcast. I believe I shared it in our Sad Songs of the 70s episode, but for the new kids in class, I'll tell it again. And the song is After the Lovin' by Engelbert Humperdinck. And the song did reach number 61 on the year-end top 100, but this song is just so meaningful to me because I have vivid memories of singing it with my daddy, who I lost when I was 10. And no, he didn't die until I was in my early 20s, but I didn't get to see him or speak to him after I was 10. And it's a really long story and it's a really sad story. But anyway,
who?
After the Lovin' by Engelbert Humperdinck.
Still working through that. I'm in therapy, so don't worry. I'm fine.
She's taking care of it.
It sounds like I'm laughing, and really, you guys, I'm like crying. Right. Anyway, for the first 10 years of my life, I did get to see him like twice or three times a year. And I loved my daddy. I loved him so much. And we had so much fun together. And one fun thing to know about my dad is that he loved to sing. And he, you know, he thought of himself as a pretty good singer. In fact, I have framed in my office a little 45 he cut to the tune of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. But it's a song about the sportswear line that he was repping at the time because he was in the apparel business at the time. And I came across it about a year ago and I got a cute little frame for it and it's in my office. But anyway, back to After the Lovin'. I can remember driving in his car and I'd be standing up in the back seat, you know, like draped over the front seat. So like my head was right next to his, but you know, we didn't wear seatbelts like we've recently discussed. So I'm standing up and we'd duet to this song and he'd sing lead and I'd do all the backups. Like I'm going to give you a little example.
Please.
Like he would say, thanks for taking me. And I'd go, thanks for taking me on a one-way trip to the sun. One-way trip to the sun.
And thanks for turning me.
Thanks for turning
into a someone.
And then when he'd at the very end, he'd go, oh, but after the loving. And I'd go, after the loving.
God, this is so cute.
So that song is
little Michelle standing on the hump in the back seat.
Holds a special memory for me. Yeah,
that's beautiful. Like that is so cute.
Oh, but after the loving, I'm still still in love with you.
Okay, my next song is a song that I've loved since the day that it came out. I've loved it since the first day that I heard it. I always sing along, except that I don't know the words. I can only, I kind of like stumble like the year of the cat.
Yes.
The only words I know are the year of the cat. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. Part of it is that, Al Stewart, the artist, is from Scotland. And so he has an accent that comes through kind of in a, we don't know what he's saying. But also the words are really, obscure and weird, and we don't know what he's talking about. And so we can't follow the story. The truth is there is an actual story to the year of the cat. Does anybody know what this story is? I mean, is there a cat?
Does it have to do with the Chinese New Year?
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. So the title, the year of the cat, does come from the astrological, aspect of the year. It is actually the Vietnamese lunar calendar. So his girlfriend at the time had thrown a book down that she was reading, and it opened up to a page and it said the year of the cat. So in the Vietnamese lunar calendar, the year of the cat is the same as the Chinese lunar calendar's year of the rabbit. And that has no significance whatsoever, except that he said, I don't know a lot about a whole lot of things, but I recognize a song title when I see one. And that was a song title. And so he grabbed the title first and then had to figure out what the lyrics would be. Is it a song about a cat? I just assumed it was a song about a cat, but it is not. It is actually about Casablanca. Casablanca. The movie. Yes. Seriously, no idea. More specifically, it is about a love affair taking place in Casablanca. It's inspired by the movie Casablanca, and the love affair is taking place in 1975, which happens to be the year of the cat.
Oh, okay.
But I think that is MacGyvered, because otherwise, how can he's got to be able to find some reason for it to be the year of the cat. Well, a love affair taking place in 1975. So when you know that it's about Casablanca, now the words make sense. Okay, so the song opens with, on a morning from a Bogart movie. Hello, Casablanca.
Yeah.
Okay. In a country where they turn back time. Do you remember what the hit from Casablanca is?
Oh, yeah. Huh? No, I mean, I do, but I'm not going to not end the time. I mean, if you guys all want to sit here in silence for the first 6 minutes while I think on it.
It's not a test. I'll just tell you. As Time Goes By.
Yes.
Oh,
is
that's
the theme
right.
song
I love
from
that
Casablanca.
Song. I used to play that on the clarinet.
Yeah.
In your stitched Holly Hobby.
Yes, I had like a Hollywood soundtrack, you know, songbook for the clarinet.
Oh my God. I have a fantasy about you getting a Holly Hobby tattoo.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. That might be something.
Okay, just as an aside, you guys.
It's a different word than fantasy in that statement.
I know, fantasy is the wrong word.
I have an image of you.
I have a daydream, a future idea. Okay, so then the next line is the one that nobody knows what he's saying. And this is what the line is. You go strolling through the crowd like Peter Lorre. Peter Lorre is Humphrey Bogart's co-star in Casablanca. He's the bad guy. But when you're listening to the sound, you go, you go strutting through the crowd like Peter Lorre. Manella, manana. And I'm like, what's Peter Lorre?
Pizza Lorre.
I thought it was like an Italian word or something like that.
Oh, gosh.
I'm going to read you the whole thing so that you can hear the Casablanca. Okay. On a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time, you go strolling through the crowd like Peter Lorre, contemplating a crime. She comes out of the sun in a silk dress running like a watercolor in the rain. Don't bother asking for explanations. She'll just tell you that she came from the year of the cat.
You know what's funny though? When I'm listening to you read those, I can hear them perfectly.
Yes.
That always happens though, right? When you're like, I have no idea what this says. And when you read it, you're like, of course that's what they say.
Right.
Right. I mean, talk about misheard lyrics. I can only imagine what I have been belting out, because I'm sure I say actual words. I don't go like, ba-da-ba-da. I'm just saying something. But what the hell am I saying? Because no one was committing a crime or anything like that in my version.
Why would Peter Lorre be in a song?
I don't think I would have known who Peter Lorre was.
No. Peter Lorre.
So funny. Oh, my gosh.
On a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time, you go strolling through the crowd like Peter Lorre contemplating a crime. She comes out of the sun in a silk dress, running like a watercolor in the rain. Don't bother asking for an explanation, she'll just tell you that she came in the year of the cat.
All right. Well, you guys, I want to now introduce you to the song that really made me feel like a grown-up. When I was listening to this, I could be shaking my glass of apple juice that I thought I was a cocktail going, oh, yes, you don't have to be a star, baby, to be in my show.
You don't.
Loved that song, but like I said, it made me feel like a grown-up because I had grown up with my parents listening to The Fifth Dimension, and we had those albums, and I can remember some of the albums and staring at the album covers and looking at the photograph of the members of The Fifth Dimension, and I always thought that Marilyn McCoo, she could have done so much better than Billy Davis Jr., her husband. I don't know why. I thought she was just elegant and she was taller than he was. So that was always like, the guy always had to be taller than the girl for whatever reason.
It was like a rule.
Yes, yeah. Which was very hard for someone like me who was tall. But I just thought she was elegant and she was just really could do better. And he was
she
really
was the
lucky
star.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And even though you don't have to be a star.
No, you don't have to be.
Yeah.
To be on her show. No.
And that just seems so odd to me. But that song was a big hit. It actually won them the Grammy that year for Best R&B Performance by a Duo or Group. Mm-hmm. Besides the Grammys, though, I think you know that a song is a hit when it's covered on a TV variety series. So if like Sonny and Cher sing a song or Donny and Marie, you know that it's a hit. So there's no doubt that this song was a hit status because it was covered on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Oh, my gosh.
By Barry Williams and Jerry Reichel. Jerry Reichel, you might say, who's that?
Oh, I know.
I know.
You know who that is? Of course you all do. Who is that?
It's Fake Jan.
Fake Jan. It's our Fake Jan, yes. Mm-hmm. Because, and poor Jerry, I think she will always be remembered in the annals of history as the
Wait,
Fake
and
Jan.
Is it the she annals it. Of history or is it the annals of history?
Amelia Bedelia strikes again. I have said the annals of history.
The annals of history.
Also, Jerry Reichel, don't feel too sorry for her because she has gone on record even recently as saying she loves it. That's given her so much notoriety.
For her.
And, they do. Like they do fun like meet and greets, and because there's a lot of people that are very, very like hugely, you know, fanatic about Fake Jan. So.
All right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Jerry Reichel and Annals of History. Well, thank God we weren't like on some talk show being interviewed as PCPS people. And I say, yes, we hope to go down in the Annals of History podcast. You
to
know,
go
wonderful
up the
podcast.
Annals of History.
So thank you. You're welcome, listeners, for all of you now that know it's not Annals of History. It's Annals. Thank you. You're welcome. The more you know.
Oh my God.
Da, da, da. Yeah. Okay.
So my number three song, I picked purely for its singability and its feel goodness ability. Let's just say this. It's a very easy song for a little 8-year-old in 1977 to sing along to loudly. And that is Your Love Has Lifted Me Higher and Higher by Rita. And that song reached number 8. In the year top 100. Those are the only facts I gathered about these songs. But I just remember enthusiastically singing to this one. And you guys, I mean, that slow opening, that's so iconic, right?
Your love is lifting me high.
It's so good.
And then the four beats after she says, than I've ever been lifted. And I love the way she goes, before, whore. And then it goes,
do, 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 do.
Iconic. You know how you, there's like certain songs, and Kristen, you had it at the beginning of I Just Want to Be Your Everything, but you can go back and there are certain songs throughout the history of your life that you have favorite musical moments from. And I have them from a lot of different songs, some current songs that are new on the radio today, all the way back. And there's not a huge there's not a huge number of them, but there's certain songs when you hear it, there's that one part of that song that just does something to you. And in parentheses, Your Love Has Lifted Me Higher and Higher, because that's the way the title of the song really is. It's that part where she goes, before
do, 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 do.
I just love it.
It'll always make you bop. Like, you're just waiting for that moment. It's
so
good.
And you know what I particularly loved about her was the fact that she was married to Kris Kristofferson. And so they were having, that was A Star Is Born kind of that same year. Mm-hmm. So I thought, how cool. Like, she has her own career and she's doing her own thing. And I remember when my mom told me they were married. Well, I don't remember the exact moment, but I remember like that song being on and my mom saying, do you know who Rita Coolidge is married to? And because we had the album of A Star Is Born, and I hadn't seen A Star Is Born, obviously. But I thought, that's so cool. And they just seemed kind of fun and hippie.
And I can remember being 8 years old in 1977 and just being struck by how beautiful she was. I thought she was beautiful.
I wanted that
her hair.
The hair. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that was my dream hair.
I love that song.
I loved it. Okay, you know what song I think has probably one of the best lines in pop music? Comes from a 1977 song. Okay, so the song is The Things We Do for Love by 10cc. And that line, you know it, like walking in the rain and snow.
When there's nowhere to go and you're feeling like a part of you is dying.
And then here's the best part. And you're looking for the answer in her eyes. And you think you're going to break up.
No.
But no, she says she wants to make up. And you're just like, yes. Oh, I'm just so excited.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
I was holding my Tickle deodorant microphone, singing that into my mirror.
Oh, that's such a good song, Kristen. I love it.
I love it so much. So apparently that line came from experience, from the songwriter. He says, I remember walking through the rain and the snow when I lived in Manchester. I guess I should read it with my British accent. I remember walking through the rain and the snow when I lived in Manchester, and we didn't have a telephone, and I had to go and find a phone box to ring the girl who was about to become my wife. The phones were down, and it was snowing, and these vivid pictures are there.
You sound like James Bond or something.
I think you're more French than British.
The things we do for love. Like walking in the rain and the snow when there's nowhere to go. When you're feeling like a part of you is dying. And you're looking for the answer in her eyes. You think you're gonna break up. Then she says she wants to make up.
I loved another song that made me feel kind of grown up, and that would have been Torn Between Two Lovers by Mary McGregor.
Yes.
Number one hit in February of 1977. And again, the visual, oh no, she's torn. This love triangle.
What are you going to do? Yeah.
Yeah, just but crazy.
I so agree with you. There were other songs, even as we got older. Peaches and Herb have one, too. What's that one? Secret Lovers. I don't know if it's Peaches and Herb.
Atlantic Star.
That's what we are trying so hard to hide the way we feel. Okay, those songs almost gave me a little bit of a naughty feeling, but you did. You kind of felt like, but they're trusting me to know this story.
Mm-hmm. And I can sing the song, too. And it was so inspiring that NBC decided to make a 1979 TV movie of the same name, which starred Lee Remick, George Peppard, and Joseph Bologna. Lee Remick was married to Joseph Bologna, but she has an affair with George Peppard, an architect.
Yes. And do they use the song? Please tell me they use the song. Like, they license the song in the made-for-TV movie?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
Because how could they not?
Torn between two lovers, feeling like a fool. Loving both of you is breaking all the rules.
to love us.
Right. And I'm going to just transition into my other Naughty song. So mm-hmm. you were just talking about Naughty, another one from 1977 that I loved was, do you want to make love or do
Naughty.
You just want to fool around? Like I could sing make love at the top of my lungs if I wanted to. Yes, Peter McCann gave us that
tune. I was more scandalized by fool around. Like I thought the fooling around was
because then it was, but that we got to sing about it. I mean, there was no like, you know, trying to guess what they were talking about. We knew exactly what
told
us. Are we making love or are we one night standing it, you know, fooling around.
Do you want to make love? Or do you just want to fool around? I guarantee it will bring you down. You try and fool yourself. Do you want to make love? Or do you just want to fool around?
The difference between are you going to marry me or are you... Don, Portrait of a Teenage Runaway in. one of my, from my runners up list, this one came this close to making my top three. Also, I mentioned it. This is one of those weird songs that gives me a lump in my throat. So I know I mentioned this at the end of our sad songs that make you cry. Cause this shouldn't be a song that makes you cry, but it does. And it's the opening of the song always gives me a lump in my throat. And that's Dancing Queen by ABBA. And just that. Makes me get tingly, but like I have a weird feeling in my stomach and my throat gets really tight. So I don't know what it is about that
opening, you have a crush on ABBA.
It's a huge favorite of mine my whole life, but that, as it turns out, 1977. So I got to.
And I think
I
think one reason that it was so exciting for us is that we were identifying ourselves as dancing queens.
Yeah, so much.
I'm a dancing queen. You're a dancing queen. We're all dancing queens.
Carolyn is not a dancing queen.
That I love from 1977. Oh, this could be the most joyful breakup song ever written.
Ooh.
And that is Easy by the Commodores.
Oh,
easy like Sunday morning. Right? Like, doesn't it just give you all the feels and you're just like looking out at a beautiful lake and a mountain scene? You got your warm cup of coffee. You're easy like Sunday morning.
Yeah. But I kind of want it to be raining when I'm listening.
Yeah, it's
to
a
that.
Little rainy. Mm-hmm. It's, but what we
Amen.
Forget is that is the first line. I know it sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. Girl, I'm leaving you tomorrow.
Oh,
but he's
so
liberated.
Slowed.
He's liberated. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not letting you take me down.
They were just so smooth in everything they did and just the way they lived their lives. I would bet that if he was breaking up with someone, that's how he would deliver it.
Oh, yeah. But how could he not?
No one says funny, but I just... Yeah. That's how he would deliver bad news to people, I've decided. Yeah.
It's a fantastic line. It's so utterly singable and you just like...
Well, it sounds sexy.
Into it. It sounds sexy.
It's almost like, I know I hate you, but please don't leave me.
I know. You're like, come on, Lionel.
We never get along, but oh my God, don't take that voice.
Oh, it's such a happy, happy breakup song. And that song then paved the way for Still and Three Times a Lady and Sail On, right? They had such good ballads. God,
yes.
I love that song.
Oh, I love Still. Oh, that was such a great song.
It just gives me goosebumps. It gives me goosebumps.
Sounds funny, but I just can't stand the pain. Girl, I'm leaving you tomorrow. Seems to me, girl, you know I've done all I can. You see a big stone and a bottle. Yeah. Why I'm easy.
busy like Sunday morning.
Do you know how the Commodores got their name?
No.
Sorry, I just sprung that on you. This is really interesting.
Are they sailing?
They're not Commodores. They're not nautical in any way, shape, or form. They could not. There were like seven of them or something, and they couldn't decide. So they're like, all right, we're going to just do this randomly. And they took a dictionary, and they threw it up in the air, and it landed face up. And then they just did like a blind finger point to a word, and their finger was really, really close to the word commode. But they're like, how about the one just down there? How about Commodore? Let's be the Commodores.
Oh, that's a great story.
Isn't that great?
If it's true. Because it almost seems too good to be true, but I'm going with it.
Oh, and that, what about Brick House?
36, 24, 36. Oh, what a winning hand. Oh, she's a brick house. She's mighty, mighty. Just letting it all hang out. And she's a brick house.
Oh, my God. Talk about another naughty song that you felt guilty because my parents had to explain to me what that meant. Like, what were those numbers?
36? I don't even know.
36, 24.
I don't know. I don't even know the lyrics to that song, so I'm not going to, I do not know
the meaning
of that.
Well, just know she's a brick house. Yeah.
Oh. Yes. Yeah, Kristen, isn't that the one that you, that was your number one roller skating song?
Oh, it was, I think it was one, it was my number one. That was Boogie Oogie. But this is one of my favorites. Yeah. And it was where I learned what 24, 36, 24 meant. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, oh, is that what I'm going for? Like, is that what I'm aiming for?
Oh, God.
Yeah. I know. Gosh. Thanks, Lionel Richie.
I remember
Thanks
my
for
mom
that.
Having to explain that that's kind of what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened as I was doing, again, getting prepared for this episode, was realizing that 77 was a big year for me. Because there are two songs, when I hear them, that I get this sense of dread. Or there probably is more than two. But one is When I Need You by Leo Sayer.
Leo Sayer again.
I need you. Just close my eyes and I'm with you. And all of that
and then Slow Dancin', also known as Sway Into the Music by Johnny Rivers. So we've got Slow Dancin',
Sway Into Music, Slow Dancin', just me and my girl, Slow Dancin', Sway Into the Music, no one else in the whole.
That's not Leo Sayer? I thought that was Leo Sayer.
No, that's Johnny Rivers.
Oh, okay.
I can tell you these songs and why they give me this sense of dread, because they played at the boy-girl parties that I would go to.
Oh, my goodness.
Those parties that I desperately wanted to be invited to, and then had this anticipatory dread leading up to them. Like, I didn't want to be off the list, but I also didn't want to go.
It's scary.
Yes, because we played Spin the Bottle and 7 Minutes in Heaven. And those songs were the backdrop to those moments that, and I'm sorry, when you're the tallest girl and you're dancing, slow dancing like this with one of the shortest boys.
Your arms are down here like this.
Yeah. It's kind of humiliating. And then you spin the bottle and you know you're going to have to go in the closet with Scott Schaefer. And you don't know what you're going to do in the closet.
What does he expect of me?
I know. And I just remember, I think there was a quick little maybe kiss, and then we just talked until people were like,
thank God,
time to come out.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you two of my runners up in a row quickly, because my memory of them is kind of the same. So it's Strawberry Letter 23 by the Brothers Johnson and Sweet Talkin' Woman by ELO. And the reason these songs are really memorable to me is because I don't know if it was me or my sister, but we had one of us, or both of us, I don't know, had the 45s and played them constantly. And I still own Strawberry Letter 23, but it's cracked all the way down the middle.
Oh,
like, you
sad.
Can't play it, but I still, I've held on to it. And I love those two songs. To me, just sort of epitomize third grade for me.
I love the little dings in Strawberry Letter 23 where it's like ding, 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 ding.
It's such a good song.
That's a great song.
There's one last song that I want to mention, and that is Dance, 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 parentheses, Yowza, 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 by Chic.
Dance, 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 dance.
Written by Nile Rodgers. Nile Rodgers, who, by the way, is everywhere in 2022. He's opening for Duran Duran. He's the producer for everyone. He has been the producer for everyone forever. It's crazy. And this song, this is my memory of this song. When I was in fourth grade, we were not going on any field trips. When Mr. Foster's class was going on a field trip and Ms. Barry's class was going on a field trip, and I'm complaining about it, my dad was like, why don't you write a petition and present it to your teacher? So my dad helped me write a petition saying, what the hell? We're not going on any field trips. And I can't believe I did this. And I brought it up to her desk and I laid it out for her and I let her read it. And I'd gotten everybody in the class signed it. The whole class signed it. And then we went on a field trip. We went on a picnic to Como Park. And so we're standing at Como Park in the field trip that I bitched about, and we're roasting weenies over the park.
Who does that on a field trip?
Yeah, I know. I honestly was a little disappointed. I was like, I was talking about like roller skating or something, not roasting weenies at the park. And so I'm holding my stick, roasting my weenie, and I hear off in the distance,
I want to boogie with you.
I feel a physical pull, like I have to go find this song. What is this song? And I'm just like, it's like I'm squeezing my weenie stick so hard. Like, this is the field trip that you wanted. Don't leave. Don't leave. And this was not an unusual thing for me. It was the same when I would go to the Midway at the State Fair where all the rides are, and I would be pulled toward a ride depending on what song they were playing. And generally, the songs being played on the rides at the State Fair were some sort of disco, R&B, like something with a real dance beat to it. And I'm helpless. It's like the little string pulling on my chest. I got to go find the yowza, yowza, yowza.
She's trance-like.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it?
No, I didn't leave.
No, she had to stay.
I didn't leave. I had to stay.
Oh, this is true. Yeah, you were squeezing that weenie stick so hard.
Yes.
Gosh.
She had weenie business.
Well, I will just add that my least favorite song of all time to this day, and I mentioned this maybe in Misheard Lyrics or Sad Songs, I don't know. I hate this song, and it was a 1977 song, and that would be Hotel California, because there's nothing scarier than going into
a
hotel.
Carolyn, these are Carolyn's feelings only. They do not represent the feelings of the Pop Culture Preservation Society.
I'm sorry. You can go in this hotel, but you can never leave.
It's
like
scary.
That line, that is super scary. I'm sorry. That visual, I even could picture, the desk with like the hotel clerk sitting at it that I'm going up to, and they're giving me a key, and I'm realizing, I'm going to take this key. I'm never going to leave. Like, this is the lobby. This is the desk.
Wow, you
this
were very
horrible.
Literal about it. Yeah.
Amelia the visual. Bedelia. So I'm that song, never liked it, still don't like it, and it was from 1977.
Think that you either love Hotel California or you hate it.
And it's so long, too.
Yeah, so. You're not the only one who hates that song.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I do something kind of cute? I asked my husband when I was telling him about this episode, but I gave him the list of the top 100 songs from 1977 and said, you have to pick your three. And one of his very first choices was the theme from Star Wars.
Oh, of course it would.
Of course.
Because that movie meant so much to him. It still does. And he loved hearing it. It was so exciting to hear it. Yeah, it was so exciting to hear it on the radio. Because, you know, you had the instrumentals on the radio, like we said. So, Carolyn, his other ones were your picks, too. One was Lucille. And actually, I think one of his others was Hotel California. Sorry, but...
Love it or hate it. Love it or hate it. It's the perfect example of when we talk about the songs from our childhoods, we're talking about so much more than songs that were just good or bad. It gets very emotional, even if it's just because you like something so much or because it gives you that funny feeling when you hear it for seemingly no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. But that funny feeling might be you saying hello to your younger self for just a split second. Right?
That makes me cry.
Yes. I know. And that makes it very hard to stop this conversation. It is impossible to include every song that stirs something inside us. We could go on like this for hours, seriously. But now I'm going to hand it over to you, the listeners. Next time you are chatting with someone, it's your partner, your coworker, a neighbor, whatever, ask them if they remember what their favorite song was in 1977, which is me taking this awesome feeling that we have right now and giving it to you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Yes, thank you so much for tuning in, which is actually a radio term, and there is actually no need to tune your dial for a podcast. But anyway, if you would like to see what kinds of things that we read, listen to, and watch during the week, including all the things we research, because we love our research, and there's a lot we don't share on here, but we'd love to share with you, you need to sign up for our email newsletter, The Weekly Reader. It's free, and you just sign up by going to our website at poppreservationists.com.
So, and also if you like what you hear, and we sure hope you do, please tell a friend about our podcast, and then maybe they'll tell a friend and they'll tell a friend
and they'll tell a friend
and they'll tell a friend.
Yeah.
And so on. We are so glad you're out there listening and joining in all the fun on our social media pages. We post daily Gen X memories that will blow your minds. We promise. And to those of you who support us via Patreon, you guys are next level. And we mean that sincerely. We could not do any of this without you. And today we are giving a shout out to patrons, Felicia, Jennifer, because we were all born in the late 60s and early 70s, Pam, Heather, and Judy. If you'd like to learn more about supporting us via Patreon and see all the fun and exclusive content our patrons get each month, just go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com. And type our name up in the search bubble, or you'll find easy links to our Patreon page in that Instagram link I just told you about.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. To good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie. Cheers!
Thanks, Chrissy. The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.
Spread a little love and it will keep moving on. Something always happens.